supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. You know, when I reviewed some of the statistics coming out of the CDC, I was pretty disturbed. Over 5 million adults in this country have PTSD any given year. Over 2 million incidents of rape, and I haven't even talked about child sexual abuse or domestic abuse. And oh yeah, all those vets coming home from war, the numbers are staggering. And I'm one of those statistics. As many of you know, I was sexually abused by my teacher when I was 12 years old. My accident that left me a quadriplegic when I was 33, and several other traumas. It's really unlikely we won't experience trauma at some point in our lives. Dr. Bessel van der Kolk has been a leader in the research and treatment of trauma since the first Vietnam War vets returned and before we knew the term post-traumatic stress. We're speaking with him from Boston. Bessel van der Kolk, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
I also want to give out the phone numbers. It's 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from you, your experience, if you have experienced trauma or if you experience PTSD. Give us a call. Bessel, you said that trauma is the number one health problem we have today, but do we have a definition of trauma?
Yes, a trauma is an event that overwhelms our capacity to cope and sort of rearranges the way we organize ourselves and our relationship to the world. So it's a reorganizing experience.
So I need that definition, because people come to me and says that their, you know, spouse traumatizes them because they don't listen when they talk. But, you know, people get confused distress or stress confused with trauma. They're different things, although they're related.
Very different things. You know, life is not easy for any of us, but we're also very well equipped to deal with things. And human beings are capable of dealing with a great deal of discomfort and unpleasantness, but the moment you go on vacation and the moment you're around people you love, your system calms down and you become yourself again. So ordinary stresses are just part of life.
So tell me about PTSD. You know, when many, many years ago in my career, it was defined as a normal reaction to an abnormal event.
Right, and that we sure changed that one. We were all so naive and innocent in those early days and thought that this happens very rarely. And then the CDC and other organizations started to look at how common it is, and it was really mind-blowing how many people go through really terrible experiences that shapes their lives and shapes their relationships, shapes their brain. And so we started with some very naive notions, like that you could talk your way out of it or you could understand your way out of it. And then as we and many other people have researched this, it turned out that there are some pretty fundamental changes that need to be addressed before people can heal.
Like what?
Like learning to feel safe again. I think the most important thing is that after you get traumatized, your brain is on constant alert for return of danger. And so you're always on guard, and it's not so terrible to be on guard. But the worst part about being on guard all the time is that you have no eye for the subtleties of life. You lose your capacity to focus on little things, the smile of your kid, good food, laughter with your friends, enjoyment of music. And so you pay a huge price for your whole body and mind being on constant alert for danger, namely, it becomes hard to be alive right now.
It's part of their brain must know that they're safe at the moment.
Yeah, that is very critical here, that the brain is made up of layers. Our rational brain knows that people are not about to kill you or that people are not about to get you. But trauma is really mainly lodged in very primitive brain areas having to do with survival. And that sets up a whole issue of shame, because you know you shouldn't react this way and mm-hmm. you shouldn't behave this way and you shouldn't feel this way. And I think oftentimes therapy aggravates that, because your therapist says, oh, how can you be so stupid? Don't you know that? Something or another. And yes, you are so stupid, because the deeper part of your brain keeps sending messages that you are in danger and you cannot do anything about it.
Yeah, you feel stupid.
You feel stupid.
Yeah.
And so the very important part for to get help is somebody say, you know, that's how you feel. You're really scared, you're really frightened, and how can we help you to feel safe? That's the first and the most important and fundamental question.
I've got to tell you, the only way in my personal and professional experience is the only way I have found that people can feel safe is when they're in a relationship that is safe, and it takes time.
Yeah. I don't think that's the only way anymore. You know, we are relational creatures, and it is such a ridiculous thing about our diagnostic system is that we don't see mental illness as relational issues. I mean, but everything about us is relationships. We don't exist without relationships, and our brain is formed by relationships, and our brain is healed by relationships, and it's all about relationships. But when you have been abused, it's very hard to trust anybody. When your brain is constantly on guard, there are ways of calming your brain down that does not necessarily involve opening your heart to other people. And that's a very important issue, is that opening your heart to other people is oftentimes the end result of good treatment. But to ask people to open your heart to somebody else after having been gang raped or molested and etc. Is too much.
Yeah.
Does brains need to be made feel safe? And
tell us how the brain, body brain, feels safe outside of the context of relationship.
Well, you can sit in a bath and feel the warmth of the bath. You can work with a very skilled body therapist who gives you a feeling of safety in your body. You can go to a martial arts studio, and you can learn that you can defend yourself, that you can stand up for yourself, that you can fill the space that you live in and defend that space. You can do neurofeedback, where by playing computer games with your own brain, your brain can be calmed down and you can learn to focus and see things more clearly.
I want to talk about a little bit later on all of those things in some detail. Tell us, who's at more risk for PTSD? Is it gender-based?
I think the biggest risk is for kids. For kids who get traumatized in the context of relationships. I mean, that is the big issue in our world, is not having caregivers who can guarantee your safety, who are incapable of protecting you, or who are themselves sources of threat. That's by far the biggest source of threat, is one's own caregivers when you're a child. Because kids have no alternative. They cannot say, this particular mother isn't working for me, let me go and put an ad in the newspaper for somebody else. Kids are stuck with the people they're stuck with. So they need to adjust their minds, their brains, their souls to people who sometimes are very hurtful to them.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about trauma today and PTSD with Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. Give us a call, 888-477-2976. 9499. If you or a loved one has experienced trauma or PTSD, give us a call, 888-477-9499. And I urge you to call early in the show because I have a feeling our lines or our phones are going to be filled up pretty quickly. I want to talk about trauma in the family. I treated a family several years ago where the adult daughter reported that when she was a child, she was abused by her uncle, her mother's brother. This divided the family terribly, and many, many family members didn't talk to her for years. So, you know, we talked about trauma as a relational issue. It affects the family.
This is a very common thing that nobody really wants to believe that there is people doing terrible things. And all of us are invested in believing that the world is a safe place and that people are nice people. And when a kid speaks up, that child oftentimes gets ostracized and is blamed for disturbing the peace in the family. And so being able to tell the truth by yourself without anybody helping you to back it up or to be on your side is almost impossible.
One of the most difficult things for, I think, many of us, most of us, is bearing witness to something that is so difficult to look at.
Yeah. And in order to do that, I think you need to have colleagues, friends, support groups who are able to witness with you. You know, and that's what we have religious communities for, sometimes mm-hmm. AA groups, therapy groups, veterans organizations. I think having people who are able to stand listening to your pain and your rage and your helplessness is critical in order to begin to own the experience. Yeah.
Being with kindred spirits. But you have your own traumatic history. As many know, you were born in The Hague under Nazi occupation. Your father was kind of a resistor, so he was sent to a Nazi work camp. When he got back, he apparently had PTSD. He was angry, impulsive, unpredictable. I wonder what impact this had on you.
Well, that's a tough question because, you know, I'm one of our five kids. I'm the only one who became a trauma specialist. My younger brother became the minister for the environment. My older brother became a school book editor. So it's hard to make linear predictions from one experience to the next. You know, I happen to be always been interested in science. I'm interested in emotions. I'm interested in theater. So temperament plays a big role in that also, how you eventually end up. You know, some of my traumatized people, patients become extraordinarily creative artists or scientists while their personal lives are devastated. Other people give up very early. And so the particular adaptation is certainly not linear at all.
So you didn't experience PTSD?
No, I don't think so. And I've been mugged later on. I didn't get PTSD. But I had to do some work on my own childhood experiences. And so one of the nice things about my recent book is that I was able to actually experience all the treatments that I talk about and have at least one person's subjective experience of what it can do for people, aside from my research and all the other things.
Mm. You talked about people who were extraordinary artists and had great talent with PTSD. I don't think we talk enough about post-traumatic growth. An awful lot of people who've experienced trauma experience post-traumatic growth. And as a matter of fact, in my personal case, I mean, I've had a great deal of post-traumatic growth, and I have PTSD.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I dare not. I'm very afraid to exaggerate this, but in my mind I do. And I sometimes wonder if all the really, truly interesting and innovative aspects of life are concocted by trauma survivors, because they are able to see other realities. Mm. They survive by finding extraordinary solutions. They find ways of surviving. I don't like the term resilience all that much, because every one of my patients is resilient in his or her own, own way. And the way in which people survive is what makes this work fascinating to me. And that some people are become amazing writers or musicians or scientists, but it doesn't mean that they're well. And so it's very easy to get fooled by somebody's outward success and believe that that's that there's problems are solved thereby. And so I'm very cautious about that. But certainly trauma does force people to find very creative solutions in order to go on with your life.
Let's see if we can get a caller in before we have to take our break. We've got Robin on the line. Hi, Robin.
Hello. I can't believe I'm doing this. I normally don't make phone calls. I grew up at the diplomatic service where you change countries constantly. So at the age of 12, I announced to my parents I was done making friends because they moved to different countries. But I got married three times, and all three of them were abusers. When I was 12 and living in Yugoslavia, I got slashed with a scalpel down my side for absolutely no reason except I happened to be there. And then the guy turned and cut another guy's arm down to the bone. And I was the only one holding it together, including bleeding all over the place. I've been shot. It was a great... I was intervening in a domestic violence situation, and I opened the door, and the guy didn't know I was there, and he shot. He didn't mean to, but it hit me anyway. I've been raped. I've been gang raped. I spend 5 days of the week in my bedroom, and for therapy, I go to a covered flea market 2 days a week.
A what market?
A flea market.
A flea?
Which is flea market.
Yeah, yeah.
In Pennsylvania, in Gilbertsville.
So let me ask you a question. What do you need, in number one, in general, and what do you need from us?
This is the first time I've heard anybody acknowledge that PTSD, and I have a peer support person, a case manager, and a therapist. And my peer support person keeps insisting that I have to live in the present. I haven't lived the past yet.
Yeah.
And I can't get that through. Or I've been trying to get a service dog because I'm also disabled in two different ways that cause balance problems.
Let me take a worry off your plate. Ask your therapist to listen to the show. We're podcast. Just have him or her listen to the show. I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to ask Dr. Vanderkolk to share his thoughts. Bessel, you?
Yeah, I hear this, and I have lots of thoughts about it. We could talk about it for hours. But my first thought is that is I hear the current agitation and the current fear. And so... it is, you really cannot go into even more horrendous memories as long as your body is feeling so miserable right now. And so the first order of business is to find a way in which you can feel relatively quiet in your body at this particular moment. And what we stumbled upon here is, first of all, yoga. And maybe not only yoga, maybe Qigong or other things can do this as well, but these are some way of working with your body to make your body feel safe is the first order of business. So you can feel your feet on the ground, you can feel your butt in the chair, you can feel your breath going in and out of your nostrils and say, I am here and I'm alive. And so that is really a very important thing that is a step that's oftentimes forgotten. When people deal with trauma, they want to go rush into the trauma, rush into the memories. And the memories will only become more upsetting and more frightening. And so Learning to feel yourself, to notice yourself, and how you can make yourself feel still is very, very important.
It's
we also use neurofeedback for that. Increasingly, our computer brain interface machines that make it possible for people to get this greater sense of calm and security inside of themselves.
You know, there's a famous quote, Robin, by Anthony DeMello, and he said that people kept telling me to change, and I knew I had to, but I couldn't, and I felt ashamed and guilty. And the more they tried to tell me to change, the more I couldn't, which made me feel more ashamed. He said, and then somebody came to me and looked me in the eye and said, don't change, don't change. I love you the way you are. And suddenly I began to change. So don't force yourself to do or be or even think any differently right now. Right now, all you have to do is find safety, even for a second or two. That's the beginning. So, you know, what Dr. Van der Kolk said is right on, and it's a new beginning, and that's a way of rewiring your brain. Even feel how the phone feels in your hand right now, what the temperature is, what the texture is. So I wish you the best, and I want to thank you so much for your call and the courage it took to open up.
Yeah, I want to subscribe. It really underline what you said. Had this becoming aware of every moment and noticing every moment and saying this is the moment I live in is the royal road to liberating yourself. It's absolutely true. And this capacity for mindfulness to feel yourself is the way in which you liberate yourself from the past.
As a matter of fact, Bessel, what you and I did was just teamed up and taught the first lesson in mindfulness meditation.
Right. You did a very fine job there, by the way.
We've got to take a break. When we come back, Bessel, I want to talk about the brain and the body, how it gets stored in the body, and what the ramifications are. We're talking about trauma and PTSD with Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. He's a psychiatrist known for his work with trauma. He's the founder and medical director of the Trauma Center in Brookline, Massachusetts. He's written a number of books, including The Body Keeps Score. Later on, we'll hear from Dr. Stephen Berkowitz. He's an associate professor of psychiatry at University of Pennsylvania. He specializes in family trauma response and recovery, and I promise we'll continue to take your calls. Call us at 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Devereaux supports WHYY. For more than 100 years, Devereaux has worked to provide loving and clinical care to some of the most vulnerable members of society, including individuals on the autism spectrum. Austin, who first attended a Devereaux school at age 5, was almost entirely unable to communicate. Through a combination of his mother's advocacy, his hard work, and the support of Devereaux, he said, "I love you," to his mother for the first time. More about Devereaux's programs and services online at devereaux.org.
WHYY is a source of news and information. It can also be a resource with unlimited potential. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. WHYY continues to expand with new listeners tuning in every day. As the number of listeners grow, we have the chance to also grow our membership. More member support means that WHYY can continue to expand and bring you more of the news and information that you expect from us. Make a donation of $5 a month by visiting WHYY.org.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We're talking about PTSD with Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. I want to talk about the body and the brain. And in addition to it being what your book is about, I had a recent experience with that maybe you could help me with. In one of your YouTube videos, you gave a beautiful example of the effects of trauma in the body. You described a person saying to another, please don't hurt me. So their hands were up, palms out as though pushing them away, eyebrows arched, and the body gets activated, fight or flight. But then, when the potential victim is not heard, you said there is a breakdown of mirroring and movement. What's that mean?
Well, we are synchronous people. And, you know, I'm listening to your voice right now, and I'm really feeling a lot of pleasure hearing the softness of your voice and how attuned you are and how open you are. And I think that's an ideal voice that you want to be with, somebody who's open to you. And when you're frightened, hearing a voice like that calms down your mind. And if you and I were sitting facing each other right now, we'd be nodding and arching our eyebrows and puckering our faces. And we would see sort of a rhythmical interaction between our bodies in a very subtle level. And this is really our core way of being in the world. We are always rhythmically engaged with the people around us. And the ultimate product of that is language and voices. But it is much more subtle than that, of course. I mean, you see mothers and kids and lovers, it's mainly that nonverbal rhythmicity that's so critical. A lot of trauma is indeed about not being seen, not being responded to, trying to make a change in what's happening to you and finding resistance or paralysis. And for a long time, there's a fair amount of animal evidence also is that if your body cannot move, if your body cannot do what your brain tells it to do in order to protect yourself, then the stress hormones are turned against yourself and they start attacking you.
How so? What do you mean?
Well, right now, Philadelphia and Boston, we're all bracing for a blizzard that's about to come up, and we're already mentally preparing ourselves to get the shovel out, and we know we're going to be just fine because the trucks will be coming and we'll be shoveling and our car will be liberated. And we think in terms of movement, and this movement is mediated by stress hormones, and we are I'm already rejoicing in the capacity that I will have to dig out my car 2 days from today. I understand that's not an option for you, and I think you must have your own take on that, is that the pleasure of knowing that I can do something makes this whole event sort of an interesting event rather than something to be scared of.
Yeah, I'm taking pleasure in the knowledge of I don't have to do a damn thing.
That's also great.
Oh, it's so pleasurable.
But you know that your car, whatever happens, it will be dug out. You know action will be taken. And so this pleasure of imagining what will happen is the pleasure of life. You know, at any particular moment, you may hate what you're doing, but as long as you know that you can make things change and things will change, you're fine. But when that stops and you get frozen in time and there's no more options, this whole internal brain system starts disappearing and you get stuck in that sense of helplessness and impotent rage.
You said in your book that PTSD is all about memory, but I'm coming back to the issue of body. You know, I remember all the details of every one of my trauma, but boy, I just got something triggered me significantly about a month now, maybe 2 months ago, and all of the emotions are more accessible now. Those are the things that lay buried in my body for, in some cases, 50 years, others 35.
Right. And see, being able to remember what happened is the reward you get for recovery. As long as you're traumatized, it's too hard to remember any of these things. And you just remember fragments of helplessness and images of horrendous images. And that's all little pieces. And when you begin to resolve it, the whole picture comes and says, that is what happened to me. It's very sad. It's awful. But I'm still alive and I'm able to go on with my life. And so what makes something traumatic is this blowing apart of the memory, that you just have intense feelings, sensations in your body, images, but it's not a story of this happened to me a long time ago and now I'm a different person.
Let's go to the phones. Okay, we've got Kim on the line. Hi, Kim.
Hi. An acquaintance of mine just recently revealed to me that her daughter is being sexually abused by her ex-husband. And the daughter's 12, and he has tortured her pets and killed the pet, telling her that he'll do it to the mother. And she's taken her away once to a shelter, and he's found her. She's reported this. He's well known in the community, and nobody believes her or the child. And I'm just looking for some kind of advice. I know that she's been to a lawyer, and the lawyer has said to her that the daughter shouldn't tell so much of the story because nobody's going to believe how horrible some of these things are.
Well, Kim, I see on the board here that you are local. Why don't you hang on and listen to our third segment of the show. We're going to have Dr. Stephen Berkowitz on, and you know he's an expert in trauma with children, and he's all about resources in the community. So he might have something to say about that. All right, so so listen on. We'll get to your answer.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
One heartfelt reaction I have is that it must be possible to tell the truth. And as long as you cannot tell the truth, it will turn against you and start attacking you. And so for this girl to have a place where she can really safely tell what she knows is terribly, terribly important.
Yeah, that's critical. I wonder about dissociation and how common that is and what it's about. I remember at age 12 laying in his bed feeling confused, and then something beyond that, a kind of a numbness, like there was cotton batting in my brain.
So I think, you know, in the middle 80s, we had a meeting at the American Psychiatric Association where our committee recommended that PTSD be classified as a dissociative disorder. And eventually that was rejected. But I think all about trauma is all about dissociation, is that the mind gets overwhelmed. It is too much. And so pieces just get dissociated off and go into your body and come back as flashbacks and nightmares. So we now have the new classification is that we have a dissociative subtype, and there is some good case to be made for that. But in effect, all trauma is about dissociation. It's all about pieces that cannot be put together, and that makes it so traumatic. And so if it becomes too much, and I think all of us have experienced this in various stages in our lives, when things become too much, you numb out. You shut down. You don't feel anything anymore.
So just go on.
No, go ahead.
I want to know, we've got to take a break in a couple of minutes, but back to the body. You highly recommend massage, yoga, dance, all these physical activities.
Right.
So what does that actually do?
Well, the core issue here, and this again the dissociative response, is that the trauma is not a story of something that happened. Mm-hmm. That story is over. The event belongs to the past. The trauma is the fact that your body keeps feeling as if you're in danger. And you keep being uptight, and you keep feeling enraged, and your body plays tricks on you. And so what do traumatized people do? They start drinking. They start taking drugs. And they do anything to numb out the feelings in their bodies. And as long as you numb out yourself, you cannot feel pleasure. You cannot feel alive, and your life is over. And so the overcoming trauma means learning to feel your feelings, and for it to be safe to feel your feelings, meaning your sensations, not just the emotions, but your heartbreak and your gut wrench. And I'm sure talking with you that you have felt them. You have not run away from them. And so you need help to just feel your all everything that your body feels. This is not part of Western tradition because we are a deeply alcoholic culture. Every European country have their own favorite form of alcohol to just numb your pain. And then, so we turn towards China and India and Africa, where people actually have developed techniques where you can access your body and learn to feel safe in your body again.
Well said. We're going to take a short break, Bessel. When we come back, Dr. Stephen Berkowitz is going to join us. He's an associate professor of psychiatry at Penn here, and he specializes in family trauma and response recovery. I promise we will get to some of the callers, but when we come back, I want to talk about children specifically. Our number is 888-477-9499. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Penn's Abramson Cancer Center supports WHYY. Penn created the Center for Personalized Diagnostics to help identify the genetic makeup of each person's cancer. This can help physicians develop personalized treatment options by uncovering what makes a person strong and their cancer weak. Penn brings together clinical trials, immunotherapy, surgery, and proton therapy to help bring the cure within reach for patients. If cancer has touched your life, Penn's Abramson Cancer Center can help. Learn more at thecureiswithin.com or 800-789-PENN.
I'm Robin Young. Poet-turned-chef David Levy sources 100% of the food in his restaurant from the area around Portland, Maine, and that can get challenging in the dead of winter.
It's like I'm writing a sonnet. I only have so many syllables in this line. I have to come up with something other than my first inclination.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host, in addition to Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. Now we're joined by Stephen Berkowitz. He's an associate professor of psychiatry at Penn and very well acquainted and very involved in the study of sustained childhood stressors. Steve, welcome back to the show.
All right, thank you, Dan. Hi, Bessel.
Hi, Steve.
How are you doing?
Good.
Good.
Well, if I run out of questions, you guys can talk amongst yourselves here.
Oh, we have lots
absolutely.
To talk about.
Ooh, that idea scares me. Steve, I want to talk about childhood trauma and traumatic stress. Like everything else, the effects of trauma on children looks different than PTSD in adults.
Absolutely, and I think Bessel in his book and other venues has described very, very well that there are significant differences, and that PTSD is really only one of the trauma-related syndromes or disorders that people suffer, and it may be the sort of paradigm, but it's not the only one. And Bessel has led the way in trying to talk about the changes that occur developmentally in children, especially those who are exposed to chronic trauma, and that what we often see is a range of symptoms and behaviors and difficulties far beyond PTSD in terms of inability to trust or attach. Aggression is a common phenomenon that we'll see in children.
And, concentration, learning.
Right. I was just about to mention that, in Philadelphia in particular, we see, I've been referred many, many kids who allegedly have learning issues or ADHD, and they're traumatized, and they can't think. They can't process information because of the impact of the chronic stress and trauma has on them.
I want to go to the phones, but before I do, Steve, I want to raise a question with you. I don't know if you've heard the whole show, but in our last segment, a woman called about someone who was abused by her father, a 12-year-old girl, and mother is trying to protect the daughter from this man, and he keeps finding her because he's well known in the community. I asked her to listen in to this segment because, you know, one of your areas of expertise is you know, what's available in the community.
Well, this is unfortunately, and I know Bessel's heard these stories before as well, of very well-connected individuals who, for whatever reason, seem to be above the law or above the social contract that we all have. And spouses and children are in chronic fear, and no one will reach out to them. And my you know, and I don't know where they are.
They're local.
But, well, I mean, you know, how local? My, you know, very humble recommendation is come see me, and we'll figure it out. Bessel said, I think, you know, very correctly that when your voice and your experience cannot be articulated, that it only increases the traumatic situation and that sense that many people have who are traumatized of being isolated as if the world isn't really there and real.
Well, let me just say to her that Dr. Stephen Berkowitz is at University of Pennsylvania, and he's with the Department of Psychiatry. He's very easy to find there. Let's go to the phones, gentlemen. We've got Rachel on the line. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. I'm 50 years old, and I just wanted to say that in 1979, I was molested and sexually abused by a Margate City lifeguard. And it's taken me this long, 3 treatment centers, countless therapies, many of which you were talking about that were incredible at the Life Healing Center, Sierra, Tucson, Masters, and Johnson. My current trauma now is that now that I'm able to finally see the entire impact, which seems endless, on my life, and I want to go after this guy because of the statute of limitations, I can't do it.
Yeah, we're hardwired, and I'll turn this to you, Bessel. We're hardwired to find justice.
Boy, that's a tough one. Yes, we're hardwired to find justice, and it's important to find some sense of that somebody is on your side and believes you. It's a tricky thing to go after your abuser because it becomes a very intense absorption of your energy, and it may rob you of building up your own life. And yet, nobody can talk you out of that, because when you have that intense feeling of needing to do something, it's hard to be talked out of it. My experience is that the more people resolve their trauma and accept that this is what happened to them, the more they become devoted to building up their own life and not be preoccupied with their abuser. But this is a very tough question to answer. I wonder what Steve has to say about this, actually.
I would agree, and I would suggest that or at least you've somewhat implied that the treatment's not over. If you know that drive to you know, get justice in a sense becomes part of the traumatic response.
Well, that's kind of what she said. She said her current trauma, but I want to pick up on her language and suggest something to you, Rachel. You said that the trauma is about not being able to charge him, and I wonder if your suffering is not about not charging him, but holding on to your desire so tightly that it's that desire, your desire, that's causing the suffering. And if you can kind of rethink it that way, then you're taking back some of your power. If you want to go after him, continually go after him, It makes sense. It's what the brain does. But you are empowering him in the process, in your mind. So come back to you. Come back to what you can care for inside your body and inside your life. I wish you the best. I hope.
Thank you.
I hope some of our advice was helpful for you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Let's go. Stick with the phones. We'll go to Trish. Trish?
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. Hi. I had called. I've been listening to the show, and this is not normally something I would call a show about, but I guess I was one of 10 children, and I was sexually abused by my dad. We had 5 brothers and 5 sisters, and all 5 sisters were molested by my dad over the years, from the time I think I was, he told me I was 3 when he was dying, until I left when I was 18. The physical part of it stopped when I was about 13, but I found out he also had some voyeuristic tendencies and, you know, had set the house up in such a way so that he had access to all kinds of different things. And he was a very strict individual. And I think one of the things that's bothered me over the years is I've gone to therapy. I feel like I came to different points of forgiveness and understanding his illness. I, of course, turned out towards addiction, which I'm in recovery today, thank God, and for a long time. But one of the things that I see that bothers me with the ongoing effects of trauma and not sometimes understanding that, like I still have an inability to really connect like on an intimate level with people. Somebody that people look to for advice. I'm somebody that people look to,
Trish,
that's nurturing and kind.
Let me stop
but
you.
I can't seem to get that.
Let me stop you for a minute. What do you mean by connect with others? Break that down a little bit.
I break that down, especially in my relationships with men. I had a bad marriage that produced 2 awesome sons. But I've never been able to enter into another relationship after that.
Do you know what stops you?
I don't have that trust level.
Do you know what stops you?
It's that intimacy. It's that fear, and it's that even trusting the individual.
Okay, so it's fear that stops you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, now let's turn to our experts who really actually know what they're talking about here.
You're doing a pretty good job.
You sound pretty good yourself. Yeah.
Any response, Bessel, Steve?
Trish? My thought is that, when you get traumatized like that as a kid, people tend to develop a very wounded, what we call exile inside of oneself, a very frightened little part. That they don't like themselves. They don't like that frightened piece of themselves and that very wounded part of themselves. And in the therapy we do, we really try to help people to take care of that very wounded little child that's still living inside and to have that, to really take care of that child and to look after it. And then when you learn to do that, when you get in a relationship with other people, you don't expect other people to do that for you, because you know you can do it yourself. And that frees you up to be much more spontaneous and open to other people's wiles and issues, etc. Because you don't know that they don't have to take care of a part of you that you cannot take care of yourself. Hmm. And once you have that self-leadership, I think relationships become much easier.
Steve?
I don't think I would want to add anything except that, we all know that those individuals who often are the caregivers for others, it's a way of, in a sense, not taking care of themselves in the way that they want to by putting it out for others. And that sometimes it distracts you from yourself.
So, Trish, I hope this was helpful, and I do wish you the best. We're not going to get to, I don't know if we'll get to any more callers, but we have a caller that suffers from PTSD from a house fire, and she wanted to know why most therapies don't address how PTSD affects the body. Most therapies are talk therapies. Anybody want to weigh in on that, Bessel?
It's a cultural issue. Like, you know, psychologists go to school, they yak. And psychiatrists go to school, they're given drugs. And they are totally locked in their particular discipline. And if you go to a yoga teacher or a massage therapist, you're not doing real therapy, you're not respectable, you don't get insurance reimbursement. And I think you have all this rivalry between disciplines to hold on to their narrow way of approaching things. And that doesn't benefit the public very well.
Yeah, I've even heard you say that you know, CBT is not the be-all and end-all. You know, you can be put in the stockade for that.
Well, thus far I've escaped that. But, you know, CBT is great when you have you have cognition. But, you know, the very first brain study we did on trauma is that when you re-experience your trauma, your cognition goes offline. It's like anger management training is very good as long as you don't get angry. cognition is great for when you have cognition. But when you're traumatized, your cognition goes out of the window and you need to deal with deeper parts of the brain.
I've got very bad news that's upsetting for me anyway. We have to close. And, boy, I wish we could talk so much longer. Bessel van der Kolk, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a delight, actually.
He wrote The Body Keeps Score. It's his latest book. I highly recommend it. He's the director of the National Complex Trauma Treatment Network. Steve, thanks again for joining us. You were terrific.
Okay, thank you.
He's an associate professor of clinical psychiatry at the Perelman School of Medicine, and he runs the Penn Center for Youth and Family Trauma Response and Recovery. Email us at voices@whyy.org. My webpage is drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer has been Adam Staniszewski. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Today, we welcome Zakiya Gibbons as our intern. Thanks so much, Zakiya. Larry Roebling produces Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Do me a favor. Enjoy your week, my friends.